Welcome to the Brad and Body Podcast. You already know who we are. We wouldn't be here, so let's not waste any more time. Here's Bradley.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the post-grand final of the NBL. Bottomed, how are you, my friend?
You know, if you could pronounce that correctly, that would be a lot better.
That's why I mean to say it badly, of course.
Okay. Yeah, look, let's not waste time. Let's get straight to our guest because he's a great guest. Go for it.
He is, and we have had him on before, and I went through his illustrious career, but it's simple to say we have the GOAT of the NBL coaching. He's a six-time NBL champion, a six-time NBL coach of the year. We spoke to him before the Olympics. He spent the past two seasons in Illawarra making the semifinals in both, but of course took us to that bronze medal game where we won the bronze medal, and it was fantastic. He is now leaving Illawarra, and we are going to talk about him with the Bay Area Dragons, of course, none other than the man, Gorge. Hello, my brother. How are you, mate?
I'm great. Yeah. Lots transpired since our last interview.
Yeah.
But excited about what's ahead.
So tell us what is ahead, Brian, because the Bay Area Dragons, this is a new club in a new competition, the East Asia Super League. So can you tell us a bit about how that came about? Because I believe it's been they've been waiting to launch for a season or two, but because of COVID, it's been delayed.
Yeah, long story. I mean, when I was in China, my initial intro into China was through, you know, coaching at the Beijing Olympics, and there was a contact there after the Dragons ceased. And I went in there and, you know, signed a contract and coached for 7 years. When that finished and I was looking at other options, I needed someone that spoke Chinese. And I met a guy out of Milwaukee, a lawyer, a young guy named Matt Beyer, who became a very close friend and my agent in China through the next 5 years. And during that period, as we came down the backstretch, he was talking a lot about this Asian league. And what it is basically is, you know, forming a Euro League of Asia. And Chinese Taipei, Japan, Korea, Philippines, China, and that's the initial start. And, you know, just forming a competition and trying to grow that and make this the Euro League of Asia. I mean, the social media, the support for this, the fan, the love of basketball up there is just huge. And right, this concept is one I truly believe in. And one that I think eventually this is going to go in the next couple of years to 16 teams. And I do think the NBL is going to be involved in this down the road.
Wow, that sounds exciting. Gorge, am I right? You'll be playing the first season out of Hong Kong, though. Is that correct?
No, first season. So initially, the Chinese team is going to be run by Matt. He owns the league and he's going to run the Chinese team for the first year. China, right, getting in and out of there was difficult with the COVID restrictions and all that. So they were going to base the team in Hong Kong. That's changed because Hong Kong now is in the situation it's in, to right, Manila. So the team will be playing in the East Asia Super League. And then also their domestic comp will be the PBA, the Admirals Cup, the Filipino League. I mean, I loved Wollongong, and my thought process now was, you know, at the end of the season, it's a 3-year finish for me, and this is a one-off. It's not going to be there again. Semifinals twice, a really good young coach sitting underneath me. And, you know, a lot of changes at Wollongong, a new general manager, kind of changes in the ownership. And I just thought, you know what, this is perfect timing. And I'll finish with, I went to an NBL one game to see Harry Frawling play in Melbourne on Sunday. And I walked in the door and Lindsay walked up to me and gave me a huge hug and said, I wanted to do this 20 years ago. I wanted to do this 20 years ago. And I mean, you look at 25 million people in Australia, and Again, for me, being outside of Australia for 12 years and seeing what's going on in the Philippines, you know, I've done work in Japan, and now, you know, over a billion people in love with the game in China, and just what that could do. I mean, it'd have more to it than any competition in the world as far as is media, all of that, social media, streaming, all of the things. I think I send you the thing they put out on me, and the hits that came from that were, and I thought to myself, just think if you signed a good player.
Well, that's the question I've got for you. When you mentioned that ultimately we should be involved as a nation in terms of NBL clubs, wouldn't we be a bit ahead of them? Wouldn't it be better maybe to send an NBL one champion into this league at this particular point? Because other than obviously their imports are usually way better than what we can afford in Australia, but the local content, surely ours would still be a bit strong.
Body, I don't think so. So, okay. Again, the Guangdong, a lot of teams come over here. They don't have their imports. They bring their kids over here. They go to Perth and they lose by 70. Or you bring your team over here and, we brought our Guangsha team over here, lost to Melbourne, lost to Phoenix by 20 and 15, and then beat all the NBL 1 teams. But we didn't have. We had two national players, a 6'10" kid that's like really, really talented, and the secondary 6'10" kid that we had that was playing in this against Melbourne and against, you know, scored heavily. I think against Phoenix in the upper 20s. So when I go back to China and think of Guangdong with Yi, guys you don't know, but Jung, Zhou Peng, Zhu, these guys are 6'10", 6'9". Yi's a pro, 7 feet. And then we had Will Bynum and Ike Diagu. And I look at, let's say the final, you look a little, or you look at Melbourne and you look at Illy, Delhi, Jack White. I look at that and I go, the top teams, there's 22 teams in this competition, but what they're taking is the top two from each. And I've been watching a lot of the Korean league. Hanari's team's in the final four in Japan. They got Nick Kay, two other kids that are really tough. And there's no doubt in my mind, if you take the top two teams from this and you played Sydney and let's say, you know, Tassie in this and had that, you know, as your two teams and play, they'd be in a battle. They'd be in a battle.
Right.
And a last point is, I mean, you look at Joe Chi. You know, coming over here and against us when they rolled that ball into him, we didn't have any. We had 25 and 10 against us, and again, the imports are a whole nother beast. And you know, we have, there would be some sort of rule. We're playing with three; they only have two. You throw a third import, and these guys are on 1.5 to 2 million. I think it'd be all right there.
Right. Wow. Yeah, great answer. Gorge, when you're finished up, I'm putting myself in your shoes here. You finished up with Illawarra, and then there's probably 1,000 areas and offers on the table. There was talk of NBA and all these things. Was it simple for you to make a decision, or was there a lot on the table to think about?
No, it was simple. And there wasn't that many, to be honest with you. And I don't think NBA, or I don't think my first deal was a coming down the backstretch with the team and just knowing that it was done. I just knew coming down, you know, I wanted that championship. I know our team did desperately, because you always have those conversations with your team coming down the backstretch. We're not all going to be together again. We're not, this isn't going to be the same group. This group's chance, and it's special. And as I was saying that, it's the first time in my career as a player or a coach that it was me, you know, that I knew I wasn't going to be here. So I played my whole career at Melbourne. You know, I went through the coaching in Melbourne. It was always a merge or the team finished. Sydney merge, team finished, you know. So I've never actively stepped away from a team. And it was a decision that it's just as you get, you know, when it's right. And again, everything around me just said, you know what? You know, what's best for this team, what's best for this group, what's best for the staff is that. And then when I did that, after I did that, then, you know, the decision, okay, what am I going to do next? But the first one was to come to, you know, just take Wollongong, Illawarra for what that is. And now, okay, the next option. And there was no doubt that it's going to be a road to hoe, but I know the people running this. I know what it's going to be. And again, you know, just being an influence in basketball as you get older, I think there's no place for me better to be right now than in this position for my role with the national team for Australian basketball, because I do think that, and I think strongly about this, we need links into Asia. It's, you know, adding Canberra is great, adding another team in Sydney, but an international competition like the EuroLeague and playing big games, you know, Beijing against Sydney, Manila against, you know, just that kind of competition in those windows. And as you said, Boddy, it has to be good competition. But being over there, I do believe in it.
Yeah, that's great. Gorge, let's just talk about the Illawarra and the NBL time for a little bit. You've come back 2 years after being overseas for many years. Just want to ask you where you felt the league's at, how you're leaving it, and more importantly, your time at Illawarra. Were you happy with the way it went?
Oh, I was the whole thing I loved. And I guess, you know, the big word was when I first came, COVID. And I remember coming in and being in, you know, they took the team to Albury Wodonga, and then we went to Cairns, and then from Cairns we were in the hub at Melbourne. I never slept in my bed in Wollongong, and I kept saying to myself, I go, God, if this was 12 years ago, the league would have folded. There's no way that no fans, and you look at our sport at the time, we don't have a TV package. Teams survive on sponsorship and bums on seats, and we're playing in front of empty stadiums. We hadn't, at Wollongong, we hadn't sold any sponsorships or members because we didn't have a schedule. So, and we were a brand new team. So I was just really impressed with how Larry, I know it was difficult and there was a lot of complaints, but how the NBL handled that. And then we lived good. I mean, we ate well. We were housed well. The training facilities were great. I enjoyed Cairns when we were up there, and we got good work there. And then when you started actually playing, what hit me was, you know, the basketball's always been good. And, Boddy, you look back at those. I mean, you look at the Final Four this year, and you think back to Brooks, Darnell, me, Catalini, Marr. Are they better? Come on now. You know, Dave Copeland, Brad Key, Timmons, you know, but the sheer depth where you've got Division One players that are sitting on a sideline in a tracksuit that can't suit up, and you're looking 12 deep. And then, you know, the Sudanese community, to me, that wasn't there when I left. And, you know, I've had, you know, Dang Adele. I've had Reith Duop, huge influences, and athletes, long, and they add an element to it. And then you've got the indigenous, you know, coming in more and more, and more kids playing. So the depth of talent, the coaching, and the organization of the teams. And when, you know, you look at Sydney, and you look down that bench, and there's, you know, someone for mental health, there's someone for rehab. There's, you know, you look down there, there's more, it's like an NBA setup. There's more people there than there are players. And you go, this thing is these teams are professional. The players are fit. The teams are well coached. And I learned a lot, and I enjoyed the competition. And I, you know, you look at, the next aspect is the actual Hawks itself. That first year, We were, you think about it, I know I don't want to, that there were similarities to the Jack Jumpers. They played a brand of basketball that was so attractive to a basketball purist. And what they did with what they had, I don't think you can compare to anybody in the time that I've been in the league. But our deal was a new office, a majority of new players, and we were banking that team on our two marquee players, Cam Bairstow and Adele Dang. And by the first part of the season, those two were done. And we virtually played that without those two pieces, and we were in the hole. We were not in the four. And you come down the backstretch, those two guys are out, and you don't, I'm the national coach, you don't have one player, one Australian player, that's a national, that you're looking at for the national team. And we go to the four, we go to Perth and win in Perth, and then come back and, you know, end up getting knocked out against Perth and, you know, but semifinals. And then you go to the second year, and I knew we were adding, you get that other import. We had Justinian Jessup. Now you got an opportunity to win the whole thing. And there was complications of I've never had a four import situation, and the ability to move the ball. And sometimes, as we're saying with Tasmania, how pretty they were, we were the opposite. But when you look at it, and we come down the backstretch after the first 10 games of the season, we only lost to Tasmania and Sydney. And that was two games. I think it was like 12 out of our last 15 or 13 out of our last 15, we won. Yeah. And we beat every team in the competition. I've never done that before on the road. Hmm. And, you know, you get to that finals. And with them, you know, it was funny, and I'll finish with the thing with Sydney is you're in that last weekend and you go, you knew that was the team. As you're coming into that, the toughest one in the group of four is Sydney. Do you lay an egg on, you know, in the game here and then finish fourth and do Melbourne? And my thought process was, I'm not doing that. But when we got into Sydney, it raised its head again. You're thinking, shit, you know, maybe we should.
Maybe should. Yeah. Well, but it didn't pay off for Melbourne though, Brian. But I think Melbourne might have done that, not put their best foot forward to avoid Perth, end up getting Tasmania. It didn't. That backfired for them. So I think you did the right thing.
100%. And the last, I mean, the you look back in time in this league, and you know, the six championships, there was a lot of losses. As you know, buddy, because most of them were down there in Adelaide. We win the regular season and get smacked by Adelaide in the final. Like, I think it was like 3 years in a row. But the years we won it, in that initial, we made a change with our import. So we're a good team. We're right there. And that first year in 92, we bring in Rob Rose, and we make that change. And then, you know, when I was with Sydney, we win the second championship. And in the middle of the season, we bring in Chris Kerrywell and we make that change. And then my last season with the Dragons, right down that backstretch, you come into those last 12 games, we bring in Dante Smith and make that change and won three championships. And my assistant was with me during those times. I mean, we go back a long way, not the Rose time, but from Kerrywell on. And he said the Clark move is the championship move. They got the nuts to make the big call and bring that in down the backstretch. And as you could see, take Adams in or out with him, it twisted it for a championship. And that's something to think about.
How challenging. Look, that first year you had in Illawarra, that looked very much like a typical Brian Gorgian team from what I remember them to be. Whereas I didn't think this the team you had this season, they weren't typically what I'd call a Gorge team. They they seemed more individual at key times, and defense just wasn't as much of a priority for some of your players. I remember Brad and I talking early in the season saying when you were going through a bit of an identity crisis as a team, that we were saying that this might be your biggest challenge in the NBL was to get these guys on the same page. I mean, obviously you did, but did you find this a difficult group?
Really difficult. But I loved them. And it was getting that ball to move body was really difficult. And a lot of we had a guy that we signed in that point guard position who's playing in Europe now for a friend of mine. He's absolutely killing it. That Trice that was the guy that was, and he was the guard and getting Tyler off the ball, and he had the vaccination situation. So in the last bit, we bring in Mays, and no background or no, you know, it's just we got to get this done. There's not many, and we grab him and we bring him in, and right away you see with him and Tyler, it's two alpha dogs, it's two guys that want the ball in their hands, and two guys that are looking to score. So, AC, first team all league for the talent he wasn't a great half court player. So he was much better in the full court, and the half court, kind of like Justin Simon, you could stay off him and plug it. And it got that way in the finals. So the sacrifice that Mays made, and that's how he had some moments as well. But I mean, he had to totally change his game for us to go where we do and win down that backstretch. And I thought he got better there. It was still not his natural game. And then with that, he still had the ball in his hand, and it was uncomfortable for Tyler, that adjustment. I thought, like Bryce and Norton, take him off the ball. Don't let those guys pick him up and bang him, and we'll get the ball back to you. It didn't get back to him enough. And so there was frustration there. So that it wasn't easy. And then on the defensive end, a key one for us. And I mean, it's interesting was Daniel Gritter. And I kept saying, who's going to pick up the ball and pressure the ball in the backcourt? And when you look at the team, we had some really nice pieces on the bench, but they didn't fix our problem. You know, Gritter picks the ball up, moves the ball, cuts and runs. Emmett Narr is a very, very, very good basketball player. But he's a walk it up, and he's a playoff and on ball in his hand and find people. And Ogilvy and AK, we got 2 7-footers on the bench because we signed Harry Frawling, and then Duop became available, and you can't pass on that.
Well, no.
So ended up, as you get down you look at the last game, we're 15 up in the first quarter, we're 10 up at halftime, but they got great contribution off their bench. Ours, not athletic enough, not defensive enough, mostly catch and shoot guys and big guys. So it's not them, it's how we assembled that team. And to win a championship, there needs to be some adjustments there on the playing group. Emmett Narr can play in this. AK is going to be a good player, but they got to be in the right position for them, and it just didn't work with this group.
If I transfer this now over to the Boomers, obviously we're in the Olympics now, and there's some alpha dogs on that team as well. How do you manage that then? Because that looked amazing, and you guys obviously winning bronze. What an amazing achievement there!
I mean, it was as Bobby said, the defensive end of the floor. I mean, and they weren't. I mean, Joe had a deal to defer to Patty. And Deli, Jock Landell, Nick Kane, they're not alpha. They move the ball. They set screens. They run. They know what's good for them. They don't need to be serviced. And then you look at the next two. Dante Exum was so excited to get healthy to be playing again. He just wanted to be on the floor. And Matisse is totally runs the floor and gets his own. So that team offensively, guys didn't need to be serviced. And then on the, I just think now you look at what Luka's doing now, and I think back, what a great job that Nick Kay, Jock Landale, number one, on we, our alternative to him was switching. Mm-hmm. And those two guys could get up on the ball, keep their butt down, stay wide, and contest shots. And then the alternative to that was the double with Matisse and Dante. And that look, buddy, and again, I'll go to over a period of time, you've watched this, and the great teams and the great players. When I came to Australia, Lindsay was the national coach in 1976. You go from there right through and try to think of long athletic wings. And this is what the NBA, they talk about it in the Dante Exum and Matisse Thybulle changed our situation from what Andre and Luke dealt.
Mm-hmm.
The pieces for me, they didn't have. And I thought they had the offense right. I thought they had everything right. The thing that they lacked was the two pieces I got on that team coming down the backstretch, and that's Matisse and Dante.
Yeah, true.
How much fun was it coaching this group? Because I think I look back to your Athens and Beijing campaigns, and they would have been tough. Whereas here, it's, and you've said it, I've seen interviews with you and read them where you've said that you didn't really have to step in much until the semi-final loss after USA, because there was, you could sit back and enjoy the culture that had evolved in the time that between your Olympics, what you were seeing. So these guys, what, like the adopt a kangaroo, what was that where Paddy had everybody adopt a kangaroo? Well, can you explain that to me? Because it sounds fabulous.
Now, I mean, starting with body out, when we went, I talked to people before I come into this. And again, you got a unique situation that I've been a part of this thing 12 years prior. And knew those guys when they're 18, 19 years old, Paddy and Joe. Now you come back into this and they're in their 30s. And I'm standing there and we've got the drop-in center and Matisse and Josh Green and Josh Giddey. I was told, be careful how you use your voice in that first week and like observe, take notes, ask questions, learn, just get a feel. And that first day, I thought to myself, when Paddy and Joe walked in that gym, there was no Luke Longley. There was no Vlaha. There was no Gaze. There was no Shane Heal. So the handover was bad. Everybody retired at the same time. Everybody played longer because it was in Sydney and everyone said bye-bye. And now Phil Smythe was handed what? The guys never had played international basketball. They didn't know what it meant to be a boomer. The culture, you have to start. And when Phil left, I made culture every night. We brought Ray McLean in from the football and worked on it every night. Two practices. The third one, no, we're going to meet and talk about what it is to be a boomer. And to see Joe and Patty now, and Baines and Deli with that, I go, God, this saves this organization. This saves the boomers 8 years of work.
Yep.
And those two guys, those four did it, buddy, much better than I could ever do it. And so it was more, coming in and saying, okay, on ball, just making sure that there was no surprises, that we came to an agreement. This is how we're going to guard an on-ball screen. This is how we're going to guard a base. And there was conversation there. And those guys have been coached by better coaches than me. And I made adjustments. But also, if I put my foot down and said, no, we're not dropping. We're not standing under the rim like you did. I thought that was a bust personally. And I'm putting my foot down here. They supported it.
Yeah.
So leading to the culture night where Paddy ran that, and you know, you forget, like, a guy, I think, honestly, like, Josh, I don't know that they knew what a boomer was.
Right.
You know, yeah. I mean, you got guys sitting in there that were, their jaws were dropped. And Patty ran the night, honored the 64 Tokyo team and named every guy in the picture.
Wow.
Talked about every guy. The thing was on the wall. On the wall was all the list of all the World Games players, all the Olympic players. He set that room up, beautiful meal, a screen with highlights of some of those guys making plays, and then introduced each guy, and they all adopted a kangaroo from the bushfires. And I'm there, honestly, and I was teary. I looked over at Maddie. I was teary. And then they do their, you know, when they're introduced for the first time, they've got to do some sort of, dance or whatever. We walked out of that room, and I thought to myself, man, we're going somewhere. This is special. And then when we got there, and we played, we had 5 days of practice, get to Vegas, our first games night, Argentina, and Patty hits that shot. I didn't think we played very well. We were just finding our feet. And I know Scola because he played in China for a long time. And China, he walks up, puts his arm around me, and he goes, "Coach, I know this well." And he goes, "This is your team's time."
Wow.
He goes, "It's going to happen. It's going to happen." And obviously one of the big moments is when we played Argentina and knocked them out in the quarters. And our guys just gave him that standing ovation when he walked off the court. And it was special. And he was definitely touched by that.
Yeah. Okay. So I was looking at an interview or reading an interview where you said there was a moment in the bus. You've won the medal, I believe this is the case, and you're heading back, and on comes the Seekers song, "I Am Australian." And that everybody got a little bit choked up. Well, I'm reading this or I'm looking at it, whatever it was, and then I've gone on YouTube and pulled that song up. Halfway through it, I'm bawling like a baby.
It was, you know, cold. What they did an unbelievable job with the music and the food. You know, they had healthy food and stuff, but you know, we had a nut pasties, pies. And then the music, you know, you remember from back into the Sunny Boys, the, you know, Cold Chisel, all the way through. And then when we were in that bus and we got that medal, and I was shaking, you know, like I'm sitting in the front of that bus and I'm like the hair on my arms is up and I can't believe it, you know, and I know what we're walking into, the whole village. Because of COVID, the village was really close, and everyone in the village was following the boomers. That place was going to go nuts. And we're driving, and we're getting close, and that song broke out. And done. I was done. I just started. It just started pouring out of me. And we got off that bus, and it's amazing life. You know, you walk in there, and everyone, the swimmers, they're hugging you, handing you beers, you know, everyone's jumping up and down. You see Joe and Patty, just the, you know, sometimes winning is relief. Sometimes it's pure ecstasy of what that in what they've done. And it seemed like I sat there and I didn't stop. It was a beer or a red wine. I didn't stop until, let's say, it's 24 hours, it seems like. I close my 2 minutes, I open my eyes up, and we're in Howard Springs. I'm like, what? You know, I sit down, we're in these bungalows, and I get up the next morning at 10 o'clock in the morning. It is hot, and there's me in one bungalow. I look over to my left. Maddie's got a cup of coffee. He's looking straight ahead. He turns and looks out of the side of his eye, and he goes, rose gold. And he starts pumping his fist. And I go, man, I'm going to celebrate that. And then Matty said it. And he said, you're going to remember this, coach, every single day. This one will never go away. And honestly, I mean, it hasn't. And so many times now, so many things you get reminded of it. You see Lindsay. You see Gouldie. You see Deli. You see, Sam McKinnon, CJ, everything around it reminds me, and everyone too. I mean, we went down and played Tassie, and I can't even remember the little redhead assistant coach. He's been around for a zillion years.
Next Mark Redford. Yep.
Mark Redford. So they've just handed it to us on a plate. Just what we said, we're quick shooting. They're playing beautiful basketball. They're just kicking our ass. And the game finishes, and I am so angry. You know, I go back to the locker room, and I walk out of the locker room, and he's walking towards me, and he starts, and I think, what is this guy doing? You know, and he got right next to me, and he put his arm around me and said, Coach, I've been around this and Australian basketball all my life. You did us so proud. Thank you so much. And again, I just started, well, I just got beat. 30 points to a brand new franchise, and I'm crying in the hallway. It's like
those Hawks boys are probably thinking he's really taking this one hard.
Jeez, that's a tough loss, mate. Hey, Gorge, I remember you and I were in a car in 2002 and 3 or whenever it was, and we won the first championship, or you won the first championship in Sydney. And I said to you, how do you get a team up after you've won your first one to go for another one? And your words to me, which I will never forget, you were like, you put that in the back pocket and you would never disrespect it, but it's time to move on. How do you do that for Paris after what you've just accomplished and what we're hearing here?
You know what? That's going to be it. We'll go to that for a minute. But one of the great stories in sport was after 92, and we won the championship, and now it's coming to 93, and I'm a young coach, and I go to the States, and I'm with this famous baseball coach at Loyola, and my whole thing was there, how do we defend our championship? How do we, you know, so I've been told this guy's special, so knock on the door, go and watch his practice, and he did this thing, he stood everybody on the line from third base to home plate, and you know, talked about practice and the values, and then they call the guy's name, and if he'd step forward, and they'd tip their hat if you did a great job and you lived by the values. If you didn't, the hat stayed on your head. And it was again, I'd never seen at that time anything like, so he was touching culture. So I go into his office and I'm sitting down. I go, Coach, just before we go, I coached this team. We won the championship, and I want to have some sort of thing for my guys on defending this championship. And he looks at me and he stands over me and he goes, Hey, he goes, you don't defend shit. And I look at him and I'm like, he's right over me. And he goes, you wear that championship around your heart, and it's not for sale. It's yours. You don't put that up every year. You know, he goes, it's pursuit. It's that's yours. It's yours for the rest of your life. You wear that around your heart. Nobody gets that. It's not an option. All right. It's pursuit. There's no defense. You're not defending anything. And if you go to the boomers now, and we're moving forward with this after what took place in our first task right now is I'm trying to, do you guys understand? And it's kind of what you were saying, buddy. I have a much more of a respect for China and Japan and some of these Asian countries because I've been there and know what they have when they have everybody. And right now, my issue, like our guys going to put their hands up and play, because I think some think, you know, we medal, we automatically qualify. We don't. And the team that Rob took to qualify, that they were in a similar situation, COVID, their competition. So the Taiwan team was a young team like ours. The the Jam Japan team, like ours. These are going to have the NBA guys and their main guys. Their competition is done and they're training now. So I'm not saying Patty Mills, Joe Ingles, that, but we need to get our top NBL guys, one, to qualify. And then the aspect of what you're saying, Brad, and I, is that the drop-in center with Patty shaking and putting his arm around Matisse and that whole event of explaining what a boomer is and understanding, unlike leading into Sydney and what was handed to Phil, that this thing works in four-year cycles. So that culture is being handled from Patty to Joe, from Deli to that. Those guys are handing that to Matisse, Josh Green, Josh Giddey, Kay Landet, that group. So it continues to move forward. And believe me, there was tremendous pressure from Patty and from Joe that this can't be a one-off. You know, we've got to take the next step. You got to do better than us. So it's there. But again, the bigger picture for me right now is you can't just put your hand up for the Olympics and the world. The qualifying and these window things are going to get more serious.
Yeah. Good call.
I've got one more. Actually, I've got about 50 questions for you, but I've got one more that I want to close on. Just following up exactly what you just said then about the Australian team going forward, Ben Simmons. I pretty much, in my own mind, thought, well, Ben's never going to play for Australia. I just set that aside, that isn't going to happen. But now that he's at Brooklyn, he's with Patty. And I'm sure Patty will be chewing his ear about just the joy of the green and gold. And, like, what do you see for Ben Simmons? Do you see him potentially as a boomer, or is that just something we're going to always wish for but never get?
I certainly do. And buddy, I always look, you know, like a lot of times when I'm doing now, guys playing in this summer league or playing in this, it's about the player and caring about the player. And I, you know, when I spoke to Ben prior to these Olympics, I said, I'm not recruiting you. I'm calling you to say, this culture is special. This is a special group of guys. Yeah. And this might do what you need right now. And that conversation to where he is right now, I think it's more so. Where do you play your first game? Where do you get a feel for ball again and get comfortable? What's better than being with the boomers in a group like this that is going to, you know, put their arms around you and encourage you and help you? I think he gets it. I think he sees it. And I think when the time's right, when he's healthy, I think we're going to get him in there. I really do. I think he'll be a boomer.
God, I hope you're right. That would be fabulous. We're tending to run a bit long at the moment. We usually like to wrap it up with by throwing some names at our guest and getting a one-word response, which I know is going to be hard for you, Brian. maybe a sentence or an anecdote. So we'll just throw a couple of names at you, and whatever pops into your head first, give us that response. The first name I'm going to throw at you is Josh Giddey.
Is who?
Josh Giddey.
Wow. cornerstone.
Okay. Nice. Yes.
Special. I mean, no one like him at what he does. You look back at all the boomers; they're all different. No one that does what he does, right. And he's going to be the piece that it all centers around.
Good answer. I'm going to go to Illawarra now. AJ Ogilvy.
Unbelievable teammate, great captain. Our thing was sacrificed this year, and no one did more of that than him. Nothing but respect.
Nice.
Okay. Dori Kodahi.
Close friend.
Good.
Nice. Tyler Harvey.
One of my favorites. One of my favorites of all time. One of my favorites. The whole package, player, person, love it.
Good, good. Matisse Thybulle.
Special, on and off the court, the best. Brilliant. I like everybody. Throw a name, throw a turd out there that I can watch.
Let's go to body. No, moving on. Let's
go to the referees.
Yeah. To finish off with, Duop Reith.
NBA.
Nice.
Good.
Gorge, we could go on for hours, mate. You are a delight to speak to, but we can't. And we want to leave you, get back to your beautiful family in Melbourne. I know you're there now and you haven't got much longer with them because you're always traveling. But, mate, thank you so much. Thank you for what you do to our sport. Thank you for what you did to the Boomers. That thing, even hearing these stories now, I still get a lump in my throat. And you are one of a kind. You are a legend. We wish you all the best for what you're doing. And we know that you will always be around, mate. Much love. And thank you so much for coming on.
Thanks a lot, Brian.
Thank you, guys. And sing with one voice. I am.
Oh, no wonder, mate. My goosebumps, buddy. My hair is just arson. Unbelievable.
I wasn't kidding. When I played that after listening to the interview with him talking about that song, it really affected me. Is that bronze medal for Australia was a bit like what the Tassie Jack Jumpers had done for NBL basketball in Tasmania. It was just such a phenomenal thing.
I couldn't agree more. And look, to all our listeners, thank you. I hope you don't mind. We went a little bit over time. We don't normally go as long, but how can you not want to listen to that? That could go on for hours. So, you know, just unbelievable. But, let's move on. The last time you and I spoke, we had Kevin Lish on here. Your exact words were, Kevin, wear a waterproof suit for tomorrow night. You were right. Yeah. And the Sydney Kings, look, valiant effort from Tasmania to lose the two starters that they lost, let alone everything else they've gone through. But, you know, interesting to hear Gorge say that, you know, that Clark was the move that made it in. And, congratulations to them, agreed?
Yes, absolutely. They were the team, no question. You don't win 13 games in a row and unless you are the team. They did it without their best player. I'm most impressed with the organisation, to be honest, because if you can pull 16,149 people, a grand final record crowd in Sydney on a Wednesday night, that is a take your hat off moment.
Well, mate, I was there and it was unbelievable. It was phenomenal. I was calling it on radio and the atmosphere was just...
I heard you crying and whimpering. It was lovely.
No, that was someone kicked me under the table, mate.
And I want to say congratulations to your Kings, Brad. They finally joined my 36ers on four championships. So well done. There's another team on that four championship list.
So for the fourth time, we're even. I love it. To everyone, we'll talk about, you know, we're going to have a show next week and we'll talk about, you know, free agencies and stuff. I know I can see some, you know, Creek and as re-sign. Simon Mitchell an extra year, Brad Newley staying in Melbourne, Glover's re-signed to the Kings, but there's some big names on that free agency.
Duop Reith, every club should be chasing.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Boddy, thanks, mate. And to thank you to everyone. Thank you to our great mates at Burger Boss. And also to Piranha Media, thank you for everything. To all our listeners, loving the feedback. More and more are coming through. And look, Boddy and I are just two idiots that just love doing this and have fun and, you know, write each other off and we have a ball. Boddy, thank you so much, mate.
No, it was a pleasure talking to Brian. That was great. Look forward to next week, Brad. Cheers.
Have a great week, all.
You know what, I didn't mention, but my coaching record may not be that brilliant at times, but I am 2-0 over Brian Gorgian back in the days when he was coaching Bulleen. Yeah, he was coaching Bulleen. I think it was Bulleen. Lots of, you know, Tracy Brownings, lots of the big names, the girls that became big names. He was coaching them in the 80s. And I was coaching a team and, yeah, we played at Warrnambool and we played in the club championships in Sydney and I got him both times. So my coaching record, pretty happy about that. I can say I'm 2-0 over the GOAT.
No, mate, I think you must have been playing PlayStation.